Hello there, and welcome to the Last Horror Podcast. My name's Christopher Brown. So, the late 80s, early 90s is quite a busy period for Romero. He has a number of projects on the go at the same time. And it's only his hands are in a lot of different pies, even if it's just as an executive producer. So Tales of the Dark Side ends after four seasons in 1988. Monkey Shine comes out that year, and also work begins on Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, a three-story anthology film, which Romero contributes one of the stories, The Cat from Hell, which I think is probably the most remembered of the tales. It's a big it doesn't make it to the front cover, that's like that gargoyle tale, but it has a big brutal horror moment, scare moment in the middle of it, which I think is a great prosthetic anyway. He also works on the script, screenplay, and acts as executive producer for Tom Savini's remake of Night of the Living Dead, which comes out in 1990 as well. So it seems that a lot of his work, and a lot of the work generally of the 80s, has been in this anthology film kind of world, kicked off, of course, by the success of Creepshow. So it's not that surprising, therefore, that when George Romero was approached by Dario Argento to say he has an idea for a collaboration between four film directors, himself, Romero, John Carpenter and Wes Craven, that Romero would agree. It seems right up his street. Now Carpenter and Craven pull out, so Argento and Romero decide to work on the piece as a two-hander, two stories, both of which are influenced by the work of Edgar Allan Poe.
From the creators of Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead, two evil eyes.
We are felons, Jessica. We have committed grand larceny here and fraud and God knows what else.
Beyond the limits of morality.
In a few weeks, we'll have it all.
And beyond the boundaries of life.
I am dead.
You killed her.
And I didn't kill her!
Just take one look at him, then tell me you think he's still alive.
The terror of George Romero.
Wake up!
The suspense of Dario Argento. A new dimension of evil.
Walk him in there!
That goes beyond all evil. To evil eye.
Let's just take them as a whole, and then we'll focus in on Romero's, because it seems unfair to talk about Two Evil Eyes and not talk about, at least in part, Argento's piece. So you've got two chunky short stories, and barely short really. Both of them come in around the hour mark. The Romero's slightly shorter. And so Ramirez is the facts in the case of Monsieur Valdemar. It's about a woman called Jessica, who's 40, who has an elderly, rich and quite cruel husband who is dying of an unknown or unmentioned terminal disease. She has a solicitor, Stephen Pike, who's played by E.G. Marshall, who is obviously who plays our elderly rich man in Creepshow. And Jessica is played by Adrienne Barbeau as well. It becomes pretty clear that Jessica is trying to swindle and take basically asset strip all the money from a fella, Ernest. She's doing that with the help of a doctor Robert Hoffman, who she's having a bit of an affair with. They are using a hypnosis as a means to control the elderly man. They realise that, as they're effectively taking the money, Hoffman is using hypnosis to kind of control them. So he'll speak on the phone and agree to stuff and maintain a solution that he's more well than he is. And what happens is Ernest Valdemar dies, and because he's under hypnosis at the time, his soul is trapped within a strange world, not ours, and certainly not what we would call an afterlife. And there are people around him who want to use him as a vessel to come back. And we come end up with a talking corpse, a zombie, and angry spirits seeking a means of revenge and escape. After the ending, and that also would say twist, but I don't think it is a twist really, but it's a spooky conclusion. We come to Argento's story, which is the Black Cat. The Black Cat is a violent tale, far more gory than Argento's effort, although Argento features a zombie, would you believe, made by Dario Argento. And the story kind of jumped to, it's a version of the Black Cat. Now, as we all know, we may not know, Black Cat has been remade a number of times in Italian film. So you've got My Vice is a Locked Room and Only You Hold the Key, and also Lucio Fulci's version of the Black Cat, to give you an example of a couple. So it's kind of a popular story, so it does tend to be kind of changed and rewritten. What Argento does is he takes the core idea of his a man who has come up via the gruesome means of a cat seemingly out to destroy him, by a guy called Rod, who's played by Harvey Keitel. And Keitel's character is a crime scene photographer, which allows Argento to use, you know, dip in and out of other elements of Poe folklore, so we get a pit and pendulum idea to start in. Rod appears to be quite an aggressive man, sort of not quite right with him, seemingly, and is using the crime, well, as a crime scene photographer, he seems to take a little bit too much pleasure, I would say, in it. He's a gruesome sort and a violent sort. Anyway, the story, the key story at the ending of The Black Cat kind of plays out with a more dramatic conclusion, but there's still that kind of scratching on the walls to indicate that there's not all as well. And also a twist to make you think that story point would not be possible. And also some gory violence at the end as well. A nice little some people getting, you know, nearly dismembered, and the wall is revealed to see a very shocking scene, quite gruesome scene. It's I wouldn't say it's, you know, core or Argento, but it's certainly a very watchable and an entertaining version. So I mean, that just to kind of round up with the Argento story, I mean, it's always the same with anthologies. You tend to gravitate towards preferred storytelling and better ones, and that's no different with this, I think. Argento's story certainly packs the more punch when it comes to gore and violence, and all of it seems quite solid. The film itself was actually, although produced by Claudio Dario and Achille Manzotti, was made in Pittsburgh. It uses Romero's crew, and therefore it as a basis for what's going on. So it's not that surprising, and therefore that we see people like E.G. Marshall appear, like Adrian Barbeau, like Bingo O'Malley. These are all callbacks for Romero, probably deliberately, to Creepshow. Even Argento's The Black Cat has links that will not surprise you. A lot of the female voices when the film was being dubbed into Italian were actually done by Asia Argento. So it's not that different to what you would imagine it would be. You know what I mean? These are very much, despite the large amounts of budget that's flying around, $9 billion, still a very close film unit and a group between Argento's, you know, the way he works and the way Romero works as his an independent, you know, as fiercely as independent as he can be, and using trusted people in a part of the world that doesn't necessarily create a create that much film. So what of this Romero story? Not perceived to be one of Romero's greater films, or for me, I think it really benefits from the crouching it and what he was doing at the time. As a a person who makes a lot of, or is involved with a lot of anthology films, for me, it has a lot of the humour that you see in Creepshow, and a lot of, obviously, the allusions to Creepshow. But what it doesn't have is all the nudge nudge, wink wink, bells and whistles that make Creepshow a far easier ride. So it really, when you look at, removed all the gags, the comic book slides and that kind of thing from Father's Day, for example, it's, it's a pretty basic, solid storytelling device. It's not as goofy as some of the other stuff, certainly. And this is the time, it is desperately not to be goofy, despite its rather silliness. And it's well, it is, after all, a morality tale in a very EC comic style. As a woman who is having an affair with a horrible husband gets a comeuppance. And all the characters are just diabolical human beings, There isn't much redeeming in this storytelling. So Romero, I think, focuses more on the dislike of wealth and greed than it possibly even does on, say, Dawn of the Dead. So for me, Dawn of the Dead was always about, people trapped within consumerism, whereas this is very much the how the pursuit of money can kind of cause you a cropper, as it were. So what George does, for example, is the thing, bear in mind, in the storytelling, the thing that reanimates our poor dead man is the fact that finally they've got the hands on his money. It happens at the same time. They get the cash, and then he rises from the grave to kind of claim it back. The film also ends in a dollar bill with money. The Illuminati, that pyramid eye image that's on American cash, and blood dripping on it, which kind of it's a very striking Romero image, I think. His uncomfortableness about the pursuit of cash and the problems and the violence that it can cause, how greed as a driver is frequently something that can make you become trapped. And again, our poor Ernest is a man who is trapped from a purely EC Comics point of view via his own, the people who he's surrounded by wanting his money. But that money, in the same way with Dawn of the Dead, I suppose, has attracted these people into their own private hells. What I don't talk about with Romero stuff is, is it scary very often? Day of the Dead, I think, probably, and Dawn for that matter, aren't really that frightening. They're good action horror in a way. They create worlds, and I would say you'd want to be in those worlds, though I know there are plenty of people who have like zombie apocalypse fantasies, I suppose. But they are worlds that, you're in. And then a lot of times he'll use gore to kind of give you your bang for your buck. I think there are a couple of elements in this which do kind of go beyond that. The corpse talking in the freezer is kind of unsettling. And then that final scene with the echo of the money, and obviously the metronome, the pyramid on the money, and the metronome being forced through the chest of our lawyer to kill him, surrounded by ethereal shapes. I think is a kind of a classic, although quite complicated from how it describes it. You know, unseen forces killing you while you sleep is a classic scary element. The other thing I'd probably say is that the film falls in a bit of a crappy time for the way film looks. So it looks quite, from a modern eye certainly, it looks quite television-y. Obviously it's filmed on 35mm, so it's not like terrible, but it's quite close. It's not very wide. You could include quite a lot of stuff that's made around this time in that vein. Certainly a lot of British cinema, although at the time it's getting quite good, feel for the cinematography when you look back on it, has a quite flat tone to it. That's probably the case with this as well, in truth. It's before the extra layer of gloss that the 90s brings us. So it's kind of it's slightly more plasticky and sheeny, but also doesn't have the the raw grain that you'd saw in 80s Hollywood and 70s. That kind of realism has been moved to something else, and it is partly because of the way TV is becoming more of a dominant medium in terms of how people are viewing this stuff. So it does kind of change the way that filming is. I don't think it's harsh to say, therefore, that although of interest to some points, Romero's part of this film is very much not his best work. It does have interest, and certainly from even Romero, with all his at his worst, there's still always things you can pull from it, and we'll be getting onto some of that obviously as we go down his career, when a little later on when he's making zombie movies for fun effectively by the end. It feels a bit to me like a Romero movie where he sat down and said, okay, so what bits do I need to make what is quintessentially me? So let's put a zombie in it. Let's have some, a morality tale. It's in an anthology format, and I'm famous for that now. And there's a bit of moral commentary in there, but nothing that's gonna make the political commentary, I should say, but nothing that's gonna set the world alight. There you go. I mean, from a more critical point of view, I think if this was half an hour rather than an hour and part of a four-hander with Carpenter and Craven, then that would probably have been far less of an issue, and it could have been a far funner ride. But the other side of it is that I think Romero's wish to be goofy sometimes doesn't really help, his love of comic elements of horror, which comes out time and again in his work, sometimes doesn't help when you put it next to Argento. And when we look at, his version of the Black Cat, this is a very muted version of Argento. It doesn't have the historic histrionics of some of his earlier work. It's not as lurid in its colour scheme. It's quite tonally, quite grey and green. And it features a degree of characters who are just awful again, but with the exception maybe of its final shots and ideas, and its use of quite extreme violence to tell its story, it certainly doesn't. It feels like a very far heavier hitting bit of work. I think it probably delivers far more bang for your buck, maybe, than Romero's story, which is fair enough. I mean, you know, that's you know, when you get two competing directors in a film, you kind of expect one of them to kind of go one way and one the other. It feels like Romero probably isn't overly concerned about that and just has fun with people he likes working with and telling a story that he's able to put his own twist and spin on. Now, his twist and spin, obviously, is slightly more muted, maybe, than the sucker punch violence that Argento feels. I mean, I remember the first time I watched this, God, years ago, and kind of like watching the Romero one and kind of going, okay, yeah, that's kind of fair enough. That's kind of what I expect this to be. And then just starting with that scene from The Pit and the Pendulum and kind of going, what? I was, you know, that is quite strong. So I suppose there is that. You won't be surprised here, although it's very difficult when we start talking about box office at this stage, because this was always designed to be an international release with a view to kind of shift VHS copies in storefronts rather than necessarily to make a lot of money in the US box office. And indeed, from its $9 billion budget, the box office sat as 350,000 domestic from a very limited run. In fact, it only appears in 150 theatres. It was not designed to compete in the way Creepshow competed, for example. So there's another part as well to this, which was, rather than it being a film, which was one of the ideas, that it was also could have been a cable TV show. Now, that would have been a flipping strong cable TV show, considering Dario Argento's story. But it would kind of explain why Romero's is less violent and could probably have sat within a TV medium. So Michele Savari was linked with Mask of the Red Death, and Richard Stanley would have been spoken to for the Cask of Amontillado with Gambon, and Jonathan Pryce put in. So those scripts ended up being shelved, and in the end it was this version that was the one that they went for. I think what probably this is just various ideas that have flown around to try and kind of, you know, once they'd kind of hit a point with you know, what would work best, basically. I think it'd probably be fair to say. So I think what's interesting, really, though, is that the, you know, what there's an element of what could have been here, you know, with more names claiming to the mix to kind of do their own versions of Poe's stories. I think Romero's would have been an interesting kind of moment within a wider, whether by the film method or by this TV series, that idea that was thrown up as well. The Romero story, I think, in truth, though, does feel a little long. And I think that's probably one of the bigger problems with it and one of the issues that kind of comes to the fore when we look at this stuff. Romero does have a tendency to go long and trim back. And when unable to, or when people kind of... And he's able to. I mean, you know, Dawn of the Dead is you know, it comes in at two hours at the right length, you know. But I do think sometimes that, you know, I think it either freaks producers out or people go, well, that's your story and you tell it how you want to tell it. And that kind of slower pace, although kind of driving you into the characters more, when it's quite a slight tale about, you know, people trying to rip off an elderly man who's a bastard, it can unravel a little bit. I think it's fair to say. So from here, we then go on to another Romero, Stephen King. I'd say collaboration. It wasn't really a collaboration. Bear in mind as well that Romero had already touched on it, Stephen King with it, Cat from Hell from Tales from the Dark Side, and also from Creepshow 2 with The Raft. So the Dark Half feels like a makes perfect sense for that to be where he goes next, and that's the next film he makes. It's still part of this kind of quite busy period for Romero, but its release date actually is held back. But we'll get into those problems next week.
Quickly, the others. The others are coming. I am part of both worlds, theirs and yours. They want to use me to pass through. They're coming. Wake me.
So, thanks very much for that, and I hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get hold of me, please do. My email address is christopher@thelasthorrorpodcast.com. You can get hold of me at Twitter at @orange_monkey, and also you can get me on the website thelasthorrorpodcast.com. Thank you very much to Joseph Charlesworth, who bought me a coffee. So you can go to the website, and if you want, it just all goes towards paying for the hosting fees. You can just buy us a coffee and say thanks for what you do, what I do, and if you enjoy it, that'd be great. So next time we are dealing with quite 90s horror film again, kind of grand ideas, fits in with numerous Stephen King adaptations of the time. I know there are connoisseurs of Stephen King adaptations that would be able to tell you exactly where this fits in the hierarchy. I think a lot of people argue it doesn't fit in, you know, with It and The Shining or Salem's Lot. So for me, maybe somewhere in the middle. But still an interesting film, and one I think I'm going to really enjoy going back to. So, till next time, take care, and I'll speak to you soon. Goodbye.